Thanks very much, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Let's jump right in. You know, this Consumer Electronics Show is going on in Las Vegas, and that's what just about everyone is talking about. Ayaz Akhtar is on the phone line now. He is with us from CNET, a senior associate editor, and does a lot of the reviews. Ayaz, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I was still taken aback by your weather report, a high of 15. I feel for you guys.
Hey, look, I just said you're in Vegas. You don't need to rub it in, okay?
Sorry, buddy.
I got to tell you, first of all, when it comes to the Consumer Electronics Show, I get tired of it really fast. It's one of those media-saturated sorts of things, you know, that is just sort of what everyone does right after New Year's. Having said that, you guys have written a lot about Alexa. And, you know, I have a couple friends who have Alexa at home. I just don't quite get it. It sold, what, millions of units, I guess. It's all over, and it's kind of dominating the show this year.
Yeah, so for people who don't know, Alexa is Amazon's smart assistant. It's built into a couple of speakers, like its Echo and the Echo Dot. And essentially, like, you can ask it all kinds of questions, like, you know, what's the weather going to be like? Or, you know, can you order me a pizza? It does all kinds of skills, and it integrates with a lot of smart home devices, like smart bulbs and other devices. But the thing is, this year, as was the case last year, a lot of manufacturers are siding with Amazon. They're using Amazon's assistant Alexa in a lot of their hardware. Like Lenovo has its own smart speaker. It's essentially an Echo clone, because Amazon doesn't really seem to care about selling you the hardware. They want you to use their service. Now, like you're saying that you don't quite get it, I'm telling you, once you get one of these things and you have like one or two smart bulbs, you get addicted super fast.
Okay, wait, Ayaz. Okay, so set me up. I bring one home. I take it out of the box. I say, hi, Alexa. She says, hi, good to see you. And then what do I do next? I mean, I'm not going to carry it from room to room to order a pizza or to play music. Or I don't quite. It seems to me like it's one of those things that's going to takes a lot to initially integrate itself.
When you have just the Echo speaker or one of the speakers, you can ask it a number of things. I mean, it has about now what they call skills. It's got 7,000 of them. Think of them as like voice-enabled apps. Mm-hmm. So you can ask it for like, hey, if you're having a bad day, you can ask it for motivation. If you want to meditate, you can find meditations. There's all kinds of things you can do. Jeopardy trivia, Seinfeld trivia. So it's a party game, that kind of thing. It's actually good for that. And it's also, I keep forgetting that it's a speaker. So it has access to Amazon's music service if you have Amazon Prime. So you can go ahead and listen to all kinds of music. Or you can just pair your phone to it to have that speaker.
And so I'm sorry, but what you said then earlier is where we're moving now is other companies are building hardware that works with it, right? So it's sort of like this is going to be the one that's going to succeed.
Yeah, so here's what we got. So like imagine you have like a Dish Hopper DVR. Now Dish announced that in this first half of the year, its Dish DVRs will work with Alexa. So you could just say, Alexa, find me the Chicago Bulls game. And it would try to find it for you with the Dish Hopper. So it's that kind of thing, sort of going through the guide and going through the traditional remotes. That's the kind of hardware that has Alexa integration. Ford also announced Alexa integration. So if you're in the car, you can ask Alexa for directions. And or when you're at home, you can ask for stats on your vehicle as like, you know, how much gas do I have? How much of a charge do I have? All kinds of information right from home without having to go into your car. So it's slowly integrating itself into lots and lots of different hardwares. And the thing is, it's because Amazon is very free with the Alexa software, and that's allowing other companies to integrate it very well.
How many, what percentage of us has an Alexa in our home?
Oh, I don't have that information yet. I know they sold millions, and I'm just looking at this list. We have a running tally of all the devices.
I didn't expect that you really know, but I mean, we're talking about probably 1% or less, maybe?
I know they sold millions and millions, so that's probably less than 1%. But yeah, because Amazon also has the Echo Dot, which is $50. So that's it's a super cheap way to get into this kind of world. But I mean,
I'm kind of torturing. I'm torturing you into the prediction of it. I mean, is this the sort of thing that one day most of us will have something, either this or something very similar in our homes?
Oh yeah, I think that the voice recognition and voice technologies are going to be just. That's going to be the future, pretty much. When you're talking about Amazon's Alexa versus Apple Siri versus Google Assistant, and you know Samsung's got its own proprietary thing, you're going to have that kind of battle in your home. You want to make sure that your device can talk to the most devices you have. And right now, Alexa seems to be the most integrated with lots of different ones. Google Assistant is right behind it, and they're building their allies over time. So there's a bit of a war in that area, but I definitely think that voice control in the home and outside the home, it's going to become very, very big. I mean, when I came to my hotel room, I wanted to tell, you know, I wanted to tell them to turn the lights off, but you can't do that because this hotel doesn't have it. But there are a set of hotels, I believe the Wynn is going to be doing it. They're going to put Alexas in there.
I got to tell you then, so you're telling me two things. I feel for you. You had to walk into your hotel room and turn on the lights, and it's 80 degrees there?
Oh, no, it's only 50 degrees here.
Oh, okay. Ayaz Akhtar is a senior associate editor at CNET. Enjoy Vegas, enjoy the show, and I hope we can talk again soon.
Oh, great. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Bill Geiger is in the studio. Our regular conversations with Bill are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management. He looks like he is rested and refreshed. He enjoyed the holidays and he's ready to go. Bill Geiger, welcome back.
And nice to be back, sir.
Did you have a nice Christmas, New Year?
Had a wonderful Christmas, had the family in. House was full. It was just a lot of fun.
That sounds like you probably couldn't wait to get out, right? I was telling you, I was home for a long time and I really enjoyed it. But, you know, you start to, not that I didn't enjoy it all, but after like 4 or 5 days, I'm like, okay, this is great. I could go back to work.
Ready to get back to the
which
studio.
Is a good sign. But you know what? One of the things I did, Bill, while I was home was I started working on my taxes and I started looking at everything and getting ready.
Yeah.
And I would imagine we're sort of at the time of year, you know, people start the new year with lots of new energies. And I would imagine finances is one of them.
Well, it is. And one of the things that a great New Year's resolution would be to start preparing yourself for retirement.
Right.
And one of the most important things in retirement is having plenty of sustainable income. Imagine this for a moment. Imagine you're in your late 50s to early 60s. And imagine that your
next... Well, that's not too hard for me to imagine, Bill, just so you know.
Imagine that your next paycheck is your last paycheck for the next 25 to 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's what retirement is. You get a last paycheck, and there's nothing more for 25 to 30 years. And the question is are you ready for that? How are you going to survive? How are you going to pay your bills? How are you going to enjoy your life?
But
how are you going to sleep at night?
I know from talking to you that that you are strongly in favor of, you push the idea of creating something so that you continue to get paychecks, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Explain that for me.
Well, if you're in your late 50s to early 60s, your portfolio should look like where you're at in your stage of life. It shouldn't look like a 30-year-old's, Steve.
So less aggressive?
No, yeah. A 30-year-old can blow himself up, and he's got 30 years to make it up again, right?
Right.
Your late 50s to early 60s, you don't have 30 years to make it up again. So your three big goals of your portfolio in that time period, 5 to 10 years from retirement, is number one, to keep what you have. In other words, no big losses.
Okay.
Number two is to grow your portfolio conservatively. And number three is to create just as much sustainable income as humanly possible for your retirement.
So let's say I'm 55, 60 years old, and I'm planning on living another 25 years, or 30 years, right?
Yeah.
So there's got to be a reluctance, and maybe even my nut's not there, to become a little more conservative.
Well, because people are thinking, well, if I could just get a little bit more, maybe then I can think about this.
Right.
The problem
arises. One more spin.
Yeah. The problem arises, you know, you got a $1 million portfolio, let's just say, and you're thinking, I really want $2 million,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't matter how much somebody has, they always want more. But you have a $1 million portfolio and you're thinking, if I could just get to two, what happens if that $1 million goes to 500,000?
Right. And then it's
the whole game changes.
Okay. But so let's go back to those three then, because you want to protect what you have.
Protect what you have.
But you don't want to stop growing.
No, you don't.
So what do you do?
But it's a difference in perspective. If you're a 30-year-old, you're thinking about, how do I double my money? How do I hit the ball over the fence? If you're in late 50s to early 60s, your first goal is to keep it. That means being more careful. That means not trying for home runs. It means hitting singles and doubles. You'll still grow, and you're still going to be saving. You're still going to be contributing, but you don't want to take You know, the problem is, Steve, most people have a whole lot more risk in their portfolio than what they realize.
Yeah, and this is, like we said, first of the year, probably a good time to look at that, figure out if you're at the risk level you should be.
And, you know, we haven't done this since last year. It's been a while since we've been in. I know you're going to talk about this in a moment. Steve, for the next five callers who call in, and you're going to give the phone number.
Okay, I have to record a report.
I'm going to sit down with people personally, if they have a portfolio of $500,000 or greater, and help them put together a full-blown retirement plan. Complimentary basis, no charge to the next five people who have at least $500,000.
Bill Geiger, nice to see you again.
Good to see you,
sir.
We'll
do it again in a couple of weeks. We all make resolutions at this time, right? I didn't know this was coming out. It's exactly what I was talking about. But what about a resolution for sustainable income in retirement? If you're nearing retirement, Bill Geiger and his team at Geiger Wealth Management have a special opportunity for you today. Bill's going to sit down with you personally to do a full-blown retirement analysis, complimentary, as he said, for the next five callers who have at least $500,000 saved for retirement. Call 800-681-2498. Bill will translate the complex retirement process, help you reduce risk, and prepare a sustainable income for your retirement, no matter the direction of the market. Call 800-681-2498. That's 800-681-2498, and make retirement great with Geiger Wealth Management. Call Geiger Wealth Management right now, 800-681-2498. I'm going to give you that number again, 800-681-2498. Thanks very much, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Elise Glink is on a phone line. You know, she's behind bestmoneymoves.com. You should check that out. Think Link, all sorts of things. And she talks with us about marketing from time to time. Elise, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hey, Steve. Nice to be here.
Okay, so what's going on with my favorite department stores, Elise?
Man, retail wreckage. That is what they're saying. And the Dow is actually down now in part because retail is selling off. So if you look at the numbers, Macy's, L Brand, Barnes & Noble are all selling off today because of disappointing holiday sales. Macy's, we heard this morning, really awful numbers. They're going to lay off about a total of 10,000 people. Sears announced store closures, 150 stores. They're selling their Craftsman business for $900 million, just about a billion if you consider the money they'll get down the line.
Tough. I want to go to Craftsman in a bit, but let's start in general because I didn't look specifically. I thought the holiday sales overall were up this year.
So holiday sales just right around Black Friday were up, and Black Friday looked pretty good and Cyber Monday looked good. However, the rest of the fall and beyond wasn't so great. And when you look at what the traffic was overall for stores like Macy's or Kohl's, you're seeing overall weak holiday sales results and that you're not seeing the kind of growth. Well, it's not even growth. It's just a huge contraction. CNBC is reporting that sales and traffic tracked by Retail Next fell by almost double digits or double digits.
Wow.
So 10% slide in December sales and a 13% drop in traffic. And so you're really seeing it's not so great for the bricks and mortars out there.
And so and there's a couple of types of bricks and mortars. I mean, there are the freestanding stores or the newer developments, and then there are these malls, the malls where stores like you know, like Sears, now those malls depend on stores like Sears and Macy's and Lord & Taylor and elsewhere. And as those department stores, well, I don't know which is the chicken or the egg. I mean, maybe the malls are starting to fail more, so that's hurting the department stores, or is it the other way around?
You know, I would say that for these big box retailers like Macy's or Kohl's or Sears, you know, the handwriting has been on the wall for quite a long time. You know, you're seeing in some cases those malls or the really oversized stores go out of business. They're usually in smaller towns or communities. They disappear, and then those pieces of real estate get redeveloped into sometimes server farms. So that's a best-case scenario where a Google comes in or an Amazon and they turn it into a warehouse or they turn it into basically a huge 100,000-square-foot server farm. But what you're not seeing is the kind of local growth And what Sears did is they tried to keep a lot of these stores open, hoping that the economy would turn around in these smaller towns and communities, and all these people would still have their jobs and they'd be able to keep it going. And in the end, Sears is not able to keep that going, and so 150 stores will close.
And so when I think of Sears and what, as bad as things are going for Sears, I think in the back of my mind, they always have Craftsman. They've got the Craftsman brand, and that's something that will always serve them very well. And now Lampert, in an effort to sort of salvage itself, sells off Craftsman. That seems to me like they're giving away a big part of their identity.
I think they are, but they've retained the right. If you look at sort of the detail of it, and I did take a quick look before we went on air, Sears is retaining the right to sell Craftsman brands. They're selling the brand itself, and then Lampert is going to take it and try to make hay with that in other places where Sears is not the sales channel, but use other channels for that. In addition, Sears gets to use the Craftsman brand name royalty-free for, I think, 15 years, and then after that, provided they're still in business, they'll only pay a 3% royalty. So there's a pretty favorable deal, and it's a way to cash out a large chunk, which they actually need right now.
And that was one of the things about Craftsman, right? You could only get it at Sears, essentially. I think 90% of the Craftsman tools sold were sold in Sears stores.
Yes, that's true. And I don't know if perhaps, Sears is going to carve out that kind of a store for itself now, and that they'll do online sales or different kinds of sales. I don't think any of that is clear. But other news, fourth quarter sales at American Eagle Outfitters, that was flat and to date. And the company said that the holiday sales season was very choppy and highly promotional, which means that they had to do big sales in order to get people in the door at all.
Right.
Barnes & Noble, the sales in November and December, comparable sales down 9.1%. And L Brands, which has Victoria's Secret and Bath & Body Works, that was down 4 and 3% respectively. So a lot of trouble across the big retail brands that we're all familiar with.
Well, I did get some soap from Bath & Body Works, so I'm doing okay. I'm doing my part.
Thank you very much for your support.
American Eagle and Bath & Body Works strike me as mall stores.
Yeah, I would say so, and that's kind of problematic, actually. American Apparel, which has some mall locations and some kind of on-the-street locations, they also didn't do so great, and Amazon and possibly even Forever 21, another brand, are looking at buying it. So I think you're going to continue to see this kind of consolidation overall as the kind of big brand stores and these retail brands just are not really, I guess, hanging it with today's current customer.
Okay, so I'm going to go at it one more time, because obviously the bricks and mortars face great challenge from online, from Amazon and all of that. But there's something specific about the mall failure as opposed to the strip mall success. I don't know if there is such a thing. But, I don't quite get why people have stopped going to malls and they're willing to drive from store to store like they stopped doing when the malls came big in the 70s. I don't quite get it yet.
Yeah, it's interesting about malls. So if you look at some of the big mall owners around the country, what they're trying to do is invest in experience. So you saw General Growth, which had troubles over the years but has kind of come back. What General Growth has been doing and some of the other shopping mall owners have been doing is investing in these experiences where they might do not just holiday lights and a Santa, but they're really building kind of a Christmas theme that's a much bigger experience. And you might even pay extra for it, or it might be free as long as you're in the mall. They're providing things like free Wi-Fi, which they're then using to track you and obviously send you coupons. Out in the West Coast, there was a big mall owner that hired one of the Kardashians to come and created a media sensation that way. And so,
nothing says Christmas like a Kardashian.
I'll tell you, serving up that juice. So it's really interesting to look at how retail is trying to reinvent itself. But what I'm afraid is that there's just not enough time for mall owners and even individual stores to reinvent and reinvigorate their brands in time to save them.
Yeah, and again, I don't understand why you would not go into a mall. Maybe it's my age. Why you wouldn't go into a mall and walk around, and rather you drive a half a block away and then hop from store to store in a big outdoor development.
I don't think they're actually driving, Steve. I think the real challenge is, what do you do with online sales?
But there has been a move away from malls and toward these, you know, exterior-facing storefronts, right? Is that because the storefronts want the billboard of that storefront outside and that would have been lost in a mall?
Well, I think you have seen some of that, and we've seen it even in our own Michigan Avenue, right, where you might have had a gap at Water Tower Place, and then they built a gap on Michigan Avenue. You had Crate and Barrel inside a mall, and then you have it on Michigan Avenue. So the brand recognition in high-trafficked locations where you're getting a huge amount of dollars per square foot, I definitely see big brands going there. As for why you're not actually going to a mall, I don't know.
Elise Klink, thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, Steve. See you soon.
Learn more about Elise and check out her business at bestmoneymoves.com. Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, a Thursday edition. In the studio is Mark Rosenberg, who, well, I've known for a long, long time. Right, Mark? Welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks so much for having me. It's kind of a cool space to see you in.
Yeah, this is a bit unusual. We're up on the 7th floor in Studio A today, but not on Michigan Avenue with the windows, but beautiful windows above Michigan Avenue.
Very cool.
It's a nice studio. And, you know, we have had kids that go to school together, but it's interesting in that I've heard about this The Edge desk for a while from several people, and then it comes a completely different route where it's pitched to me. I'm like, oh, I know all about this. We should be talking about this. So tell me about the Furby, right? You're one of the guys who marketed the Furby to great success.
I did. You've been stuck with all of us for the whole ride, back from when we were at Tiger in the 80s and 90s. But we marketed we had some of the biggest toys, whether it was Furby or Talk Boy or Poochie and a bunch of that stuff back in the 80s and 90s.
And so that's then, this is now, and you've come up with this, the Edge desk.
Yep.
Is it a logical sort of route that you've taken, or is it an illogical route that you've taken?
It depends on who you ask. If you ask my mom, she'll tell you that it's me
illogical.
Being me.
Okay, good.
No, the cool thing is, it was, the toy business was obviously changing, and kids are, you know, for years, kids have been getting kind of out of toys much younger, and I had been looking for ways, and I'd still been marketing and doing stuff, but looking for ways to kind of keep up with things that were relevant to my own kids. And like your guys, we've got kids in college now. I walked into my daughter's dorm room at Michigan State and kind of said, there's the same two desks and the same two beds. And we started asking, we're like, does anyone use the desk? You guys all sit on your beds with a laptop. And we asked 1,000 kids, and 13 kids at 8 schools said, yeah, we actually use that desk. Most of us use it for makeup though.
And so you've come up with this, and it's a one piece unit. With I want to call it a kneeling chair, right? Is it a kneeling chair? How would you refer?
It is. It's basically, like you said, it's one piece, fully assembled in the box. And it's a knee chair, a desk, and an easel all in one.
Knee chair, that's the word I was looking for.
There you go.
Right? So it's, you know, they talk about how it takes a little pressure off your back if you use a knee chair. And we had one around the house for a while. And the easel table, which is adjustable for different sort of angles.
Right.
And it's light, right? 28 pounds, 30 pounds?
It weighs 28 pounds. So if you want to throw it in the trunk or carry it around, you know, everyone's changed how they work. People work in coffee shops, in libraries,
right,
in different spots. So we're trying to accommodate and find things that are relevant to how people work and live today.
You started in March, right? At a Kickstarter campaign?
We started in March on Kickstarter. And I am the oldest fart that's ever been on Kickstarter successfully.
And you've been delivering, right? The product started going out in December?
Yeah, we actually launched on Kickstarter March 6th. We, as opposed to a lot of Kickstarter campaigns that try to raise $15,000, our goal was $165,000, and we hit that this third day.
As you say, you went pretty far beyond that.
We ended up earning a little bit under $500,000, and we've now, so we got our first check from Kickstarter in May, and we started shipping really about 30 days ago. We've now shipped 1,500 desks to 41 countries.
Okay, so I'm in here. You're here because of the desk, and I think it's a cool product, and people can get more information. How do they find it?
They can go to theedgedesk.com.
But I'm just interested, too, in, as you said, an old fart who went from the staid toy companies to funding a whole new thing on Kickstarter.
Yeah,
tell me about
wild.
Tell me about the lessons learned there.
No, that's huge. And it's funny because I'm going February 1st to the School of the Art Institute where they asked me to help teach kids how to do Kickstarter.
Really?
And it makes me laugh. I'm like, you guys should be teaching me stuff.
Right.
It started as a dare from my son, who's 23. He's like, you know, everybody knows you as this primo marketer. Let's see if you can still do it.
Yeah.
And we had offers from venture capitalists to fund the desk because a lot of people thought it was cool. But the offers were terrible. And I was fortunate to be able to try it differently. And honestly, I wanted to see if I could do it. And what I found on Kickstarter was people really want to see you be successful.
Yeah,
and
they're rooting for you.
It's really wild because in a lot of business settings, people are quietly hoping you fall on your face.
Right, right, right. That's a good point. And if someone's investing with you through Kickstarter, they want you to succeed.
Oh, yeah. And what's wild about it, Steve, there were things like when we were off air, we were talking about the accessories. The Edge has these accessories that snap in. Well, when we started the Kickstarter campaign, they sucked. I hated the way they looked. The design wasn't right. And we went on Kickstarter, and I did something as a PR guy I've never done. I told 100% the truth.
Wow. How'd that work for you?
Unbelievable. Well, here's what happened. So we said, you know, we're selling the desk with these accessories, but we don't like them yet. And people started looking at the desk, and people would start messaging me, hey, have you thought about this? We literally had a guy that said, you're looking at plastic, which is going to cost you all this stuff and tooling. Try this. And we ended up working with him, and he's helped design them, and it's great.
It's a new world, and you figured it out.
Yep.
Mark Rosenberg. Check it out, theedgedesk.com. Good to see you.
Thanks.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.